Thank you for listening to Alt Latino. Now, before we get started, we have something really special to tell you about. It's a conversation with the author of the Robert Galbraith mystery novels, but you probably know Robert Galbraith by her pen name, J.K. Rowling. Don't miss a conversation with J.K. Rowling on NPR's podcast, Pop Culture Happy Hour. You can listen now at npr.org/podcast and on the NPR One app. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine is taking some time off this week, so as I usually do when we give her a break from her hosting duties, I invite some friends to come in and talk about music. And this week we're going to talk about music and also film, all right? So it's a very special day today. With us today is Bob Mondello, the movie critic for NPR and a good friend of the show, a good friend of ours, and also Carlos Schroeder, who's a good friend as well. He is a professor at Northern Virginia Community College, but more importantly, he has this massive collection of CDs and albums that I'm in awe of. And they're mostly from Latin America and his native Argentina, but we'll talk about that later. Guys, thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here.
Great to be here, too.
The theme today is we're going to talk about iconic films from Latin America and the soundtracks that remind us of those films, or at least tell us a little bit about the era that they came from. We're starting all the way back in 1959 with Black Orpheus, one of my favorite soundtracks of all time. This is Maná de Carnaval. We're going to talk a little bit more about the film and the music, but let's hear some of the soundtrack first.
Manhã tão bonita, manhã. Na vida uma nova canção. Cantando só teus olhos, teu riso, tuas mãos, pois há de haver um dia em que virás das cordas do meu violão, que só teu amor. Vem uma voz falar dos beijos perdidos nos lábios teus. Canto meu coração, alegria voltou, tão feliz amanhã desse amor.
Okay, there were smiles all around the studio when that started, because that's such a beautiful soundtrack.
Well, it's a gorgeous movie. I mean, it's basically the Orpheus legend, but it's transmuted to Brazil, and it's two young lovers at carnival, and they're being chased by a hitman who's dressed like death, and the film more or less introduced bossa nova to the world, right?
Yeah, and you have to keep in mind that bossa nova initially was a very resisted genre in Brazil. I mean, a lot of people didn't like it.
For what?
Well, for one thing, it's a lot of minor chords, and and they remove all affect from the singing. It's very flat. I mean, there's no vibrato to it. So it is a weird mix in terms of thinking, okay, where is the emotion coming from when you remove the things that you usually expect?
And yet it seems so emotional. I'm associating it with images from the film, of course, but wow.
It's a perfect storm of the film, the images, the story, but also the time, like you said. It's like some people, if there's an exact date to be put on it, some people say it's like around 1958. So mm-hmm. it's just as the music was just getting exposed to the rest of the world. This film, in fact, helped expose the music to the rest of the world. It was popular all over, and in fact won some film awards in Europe that during that year as well.
Yeah.
So Luis Bonfa playing guitar and singing. Beautiful music from Antonio Carlos Jobim in the film as well. Now let's move the time clock forward a little bit. Let's go all the way to 1972.
Okay, and State of Siege, which was actually, this is a picture. It's made by, it's a French film by Costa Gavras, but it takes place in Uruguay. It's about a USAID official, which is a front for training foreign police, and he's kidnapped by leftist fighters, and his interrogation is most of the film. It's a very tense and exciting picture.
Okay, and the soundtrack includes this track by Los Calchaquis. It was a group based in Paris, but formed by folks from Argentina.
Sounds very martial.
Martial.
Okay, tell me what it sounds like.
It is a martial. I mean, if you want to add complications to the thing, think about the fact that the movie does take place in Uruguay, but it's supposedly about Chile, and the music is from the Altiplano, which is Bolivia and Chile, and it's performed by an Argentine group that lives in France.
Okay, this track has something in common with the first one we heard, in that the music reflects the culture in which the story takes place.
The other thing that happened there, I mean, at the time there was a huge resurgence of folklore music in all Latin America, particularly in South America, so this, you know, fit perfectly at the time.
Okay, this is 1972, and this is when the Nueva Canción movement really took off. And that was music that was socially conscious in nature, but full of Latin American folk references.
It's Nueva Canción movement, but also you have to keep in mind, you know, this is coming after, you know, Cuban Revolution, the whole idea of Latin American movements and revaluation of Latin American culture in general. So it was really important to have sort of a local music, in a sense.
Very traditional songs, instruments, concepts, ideas.
Yeah, and in the particular case of State of Siege, it's also taking into consideration native culture. It is not just, you know, sort of criollo, but it's also Aboriginal culture playing a huge role in it. And most of the music from the movie is based on that. So
let's move forward now to 1981 and go back to Brazil with the film Pixote.
Yeah, now this is a very different feel. It's about the life of a boy on the streets of Sao Paulo. And he's involved in all kinds of little petty crimes and prostitution and all sorts of things. It was made by the guy who did Kiss of the Spider Woman, Hector Babenco. And it's a different feel, I think, than the Orfeo Negro. It's wistful and it's evocative. What you should picture during this is of a kid wandering.
It's the music that you hear in the closing scene that dissolve into the credits. And he's this young boy who's the subject of the film, is walking along the railroad tracks through this shanty town. It's a very, very powerful image with this spectacular music.
This doesn't sound native at all. This is such a change from the previous music.
Well, to me, it sounds a little bit like Lecuona, who's Cuban. So, it's much more evocative. You're mm-hmm. right. I mean, what floors me about this movie, I mean, you know, sort of an aside, is that the kid playing Pisciotti was a street kid. In actuality, he's not an actor.
Yeah.
And then shortly after the movie, he got killed in some of the circumstances that happens to the kid in the movie.
The movie.
So, I mean, the whole idea of reality seeping in, I mean, it's like devastating.
Yeah. Most of these films that we're going to talk about today, I saw when they first came out. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's been a long time since...
Well, me too.
Yeah, right? Mm-hmm. So, but the theme of this film, the child out on his own, also had resonance today with the stories of the unaccompanied minors coming to the U.S. From Latin America, and also into Europe from Afghanistan and Syria. So that story is playing out again as we speak. And a lot of those themes that the film touches on are still very real for a lot of people around the world.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, particularly in this film, where what the kids are trying to do is try to put a family together of sorts. And that is a job that should be left to adults, but there are no adults there, so they're, you know, on their own.
Bob, let's talk a little bit about your development as a film critic as you went along. I'd imagine that these films that were coming out in the late 70s, mid 80s from Latin America, as those industries started to get strong, they were having an effect here in the United States on you personally as a critic, but then also on the film going public as well, right?
Well, sure. Actually, my experience of them was pretty much before I was a film critic. I was a publicist for a chain of movie theaters and also for the Key Theater downtown here in Washington, D.C., which tended to show international pictures. And so I got to publicize a lot of these movies. I was going to them in advance and was kind of excited about the movement of them. European movies and Latino movies altogether, because they were eye-poppingly new for me. You know, American culture didn't really get into foreign films until the 1960s in a way. And so, you know, I was fresh out of college. This was all very exciting. It was, you know, like, cool for me to see this stuff. I met my husband, Carlos, a few years later, and of course that deepened my interest in all things Latino. But it's, you know, it was definitely something that was new to me, and I think new to the United States in general. I mean, you remember Walt Disney had popularized some Latin flavored music in his cartoons on occasion, but. And you know, there was Flying Down to Rio. There were all those movies that Fred Astaire made, and Bob Hope and Bing Crosby.
Bing Crosby.
But this was these films represented something that felt more authentic. Felt like it was coming from Latin America, and that was a much more interesting notion for me.
One of the films that I remember being devastated by, and it made such a strong impact, was this next film we're going to talk about, The Official Story, from 1985.
It is about the aftermath of the dictatorship in Argentina. An Argentine high school teacher, played by Norma Alejandro, she adopted a daughter during the dictatorship, and she sets out to find out who the birth mother was. This was a picture that won an Oscar for Best Foreign Language Film and brought to an awful lot of people in this country. It brought the whole situation to their attention. Of course, Carlos actually lived through all of that.
Yeah, I mean, what's fascinating about the movie is that the subject of the movie still goes on today. I mean, you know, grandmothers of Plaza de Mayo, abuelas, are still looking for their grandkids. And actually, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, they found granddaughter 117th, I believe.
Wow.
So it is an ongoing search.
These are children who were disappeared during the dictatorship.
Basically, the mothers were kept alive while they were pregnant. They delivered the babies and they were assassinated. And the babies were given to proper families, not to be raised as communists. So there was the deal, I guess.
Many air quotes around that. That
was, oh, yeah.
Okay, let's move on to 1986.
Ah, you're thinking Man Facing Southeast.
Correct.
This is a patient in a mental institution who claims to be an extraterrestrial. And the question while you're watching it is whether he's right. It's like, it's really an interesting picture. The music is by one of my favorite Argentine composers, Pedro Aznar. And it's a fabulous electronic score. It whizzes and buzzes and does all kinds of wonderful things.
Well, and this is at the time where he had left a rock band, which is humongous in Latin America, which is called Serú Girán, and went to Berkeley to study, and then
Berkeley School of Music in Boston.
Yes, and then he was called by Pat Metheny to join the band.
This very evocative track is called Doctor, ¿Por qué me abandona? Doctor, why did you abandon me? Okay, speaking of movies, we want to take a quick break to remind you to listen to this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour. They have an interview with the author of the Harry Potter novels, J.K. Rowling, about her mystery series that she writes as Robert Galbraith. You can find Pop Culture Happy Hour at npr.org/podcast and on the NPR One app. And now let's get back to our own movie music. Okay, the theme this week is films from Latin America and the soundtracks that made them stick out. Next, we move to 1996, Cuba and the film Fresa y Chocolate.
We were talking about Cuban music before, and this is a real contrast to the sort of electronic thing we were just hearing. This is much more lush. It's the story is a study in contrast. It's about two men. One of them is gay. The other is straight. One is a communist. The other is a real individualist. One is suspicious. The other is absolutely accepting. It's a lovely movie. Strawberry and Chocolate.
So what does this film say about Cuba in 1996?
Well, I guess two different readings. I mean, for a Latin American audience and for one in the United States. Sure. I mean, the movie is based on a short story called The Wolf, the Forest, and the New Man. So it was sort of marking a degree of openness in terms of, okay, we don't have any problem to talk about these issues, particularly the idea of homosexuality. So I think that certainly, you know, from a Latin American audience, this signify sort of a shift in the way in which things were taking place in Cuba.
And I think for the American audience, the surprise was that this was a Cuban film dealing with gay issues and not doing it in a pejorative way. It was seen as a sort of a striking picture at a time when, you know, in the United States, we hadn't made very many films about gay people that were in any way accepting and favorable. So this was kind of a remarkable view of another culture.
Yeah, I think the other thing that you have to factor in is that this was one of many Cuban films that was released in Latin America, while in the United States it was, at least to my recollection, virtually the only one.
Right, so. Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to fast forward to 2000, the new millennium. This next film is from Colombia. Tell us about La Virgen de los Sicarios.
Well, it's about a middle-aged man who loves a gun-happy 16-year-old. And when the youngster is murdered, the older man searches for his killer. And he finds another kid, much like him, in the Medellin slums.
All the killers are young because, according to Colombian law, they would not be prosecuted as an adult. So there's an advantage of having an underage killer, hopefully, you know, a pre-adolescent one, if you can get one. What is interesting also is that the author of the novel in which the movie is based is from Colombia, but he lives in Mexico. And then if you want to add to the mix, the composer is from Chile.
This is the song that we chose is called Fiesta de Negritos. It's a cumbia, and I think it's one of the first times that cumbia is stepping out from the working class, stepping out from being looked down upon and being put into this film. And people are at that point starting to see, wow, you know, cumbia is all over the place in various countries in Latin America. I thought we were just listening to it. This is Fiesta de Negritos.
Thank you.
And now we're going to talk about another film that was released in 2000. And in terms of movie music, this film, Amores Perros, which is from Mexico, made an impact not just for the film itself, but the soundtrack. It was a double CD soundtrack. And it really helped push the whole rock and Espanol, Latin alternative, which wasn't called back then, but all of these bands eventually became part of that scene, pushed it into the mainstream. This thing was like a catapult for bands like Café Tacuba from all over Latin America.
Well, it also had a lot of ground to cover because there were three stories in it. So, you know, you needed a lot of different moods and things like that too. So it made sense to be doing it. It's a three-part story about loyalty. You know, dogs are loyal, hence Amores Perros. And specifically disloyalty to a brother, to a wife, and to a mistress. It was part of a trilogy of death that Alejandro Iñárritu made. The other two pictures that in that trilogy are 21 Grams and Babel.
One of the first works from a major filmmaker now.
Right.
Yeah, and the other thing that you have is that, I mean, in terms of the music, is that the album was produced by Santolaya,
Gustavo
Santolaya, from Argentina. And basically, this is a roster of all the bands that he was producing at the time. And what you have here, I think, is an interesting shift in terms of the notion of crossover. Before, and ever since also, I mean, you have performers who would say, well, in order to crossover into an Anglo audience, you need to switch to English. And all these bands would say, okay, fine, you know, we've been listening to music in English, no problem. You can listen to music in Spanish, no problem. There's no need for us to translate anything. You know, you crossover, we'll play the music for you.
We brought in three tracks from that double CD, and we want to play all three in very short form, just to give you an idea of the variety of sounds that was happening back then and the variety of musicians that were making music all over Latin America. We're going to start with Café Tacuba.
Abrázame y muérdeme. Llévate contigo mis heridas.
And now for a contrast, the very early rap of Control Motet.
Suficiente son los problemas de un solo día, como para preocuparse por el futuro. Olvidamos que para poder llegar al otro lado, hay que empezar derribando el primero de los muros.
And now we hear the sounds of classic Argentine rock from the 1990s with the band Bersuit Vergara. I can't emphasize enough just how influential and groundbreaking the Amores Perros soundtrack was, especially for me, because I learned a lot about the sound of Latin alternative from this double CD set. This music is from the film that's going to end our discussion today. The movie was released in 2001 and had everyone talking.
Ah, yes. Y tu mamá también. The world was so excited about this picture when it came out. It's basically about two teenage boys who get to live a dream. It's Gael García Bernal, who was being introduced to the world in this picture, and Diego Luna. And they travel. It's just a road trip. It's a road trip movie. They're traveling with a gorgeous older woman played by Maribel Verdú.
Y tu mamá también changed the world for a lot of people, especially those two young actors.
Totally.
And the soundtrack also included a lot of rock and Espanol from back then. This is the Mexican band Plastilina Mosh and their track, El Cielo.
Tiburones me condujeron a la corte de Neptuno. Se me acusaba que en un viernes de dolores a la sirena me comí en el desayuno.
By the way, Felix, we have another 13 movies that we could have done. you should have us back.
We're going to do that part two. Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, the 21st century movies.
Carlos Schroeder and Bob Mondello, thank you so much for coming by and sharing this with us, man. This was a lot of fun.
It's a joy.
Well, thank you.
And you can hear every track we play today in their entirety on our website at npr.org/altlatino. Don't forget to Keep in touch with us on Facebook and Twitter. Give us some of your favorite films from Latin America that had very, very cool or interesting soundtracks. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine Garz will be back next week. We are NPR's Alt Latino.
Un sirenito justo al año de casados con la cara.